Chapter 1520, A Safe Place. Marcus had never directly seen the founder's face, but he had caught glimpses of him appearing in TV reports or in the occasional newspaper article. Out of all the founders of NIRV, the one he had seen the least was Rickel. The man seemed to avoid the spotlight like a plague, shying away from public interviews and rarely making any appearances to greet even his most prestigious guests. The Dark Guild had done backhanded deals with some of the workers at NIRV before. It was how they had obtained their product lines, but even during those secret transactions, Rickel had remained a ghost. He was an enigma in a world of notorious names, and now, on the day the Dark Guild was being torn apart, Rickel appeared out of nowhere. That alone set off alarms in Marcus's mind, warning him to be cautious, because whatever this man wanted had to be serious. "What is someone from NIRV doing here, and do you even know the full extent of my situation?" Marcus asked, wincing as he shifted. Pain flared through his body with every movement, each breath coming out as a ragged rasp. He didn't know if he could handle a fight against these two men right now, especially with his body on the verge of collapse. Maybe, he thought grimly, it was one of those situations where the enemy of your enemy became your temporary friend. At least that was the hope he clung to for now, because he had nothing else left. "We should move," Dean said firmly. "Even though you sprayed him, I'm sure there will be those tracking his scent. Or who knows, they might be searching even harder now that the scent is gone. Either way, staying still isn't an option. Follow us if you want to live. I'll make it as simple as that," Rickel added, his voice as flat and matter-of-fact as if he were discussing the weather. Marcus stared at him for a long moment, then slowly pushed himself off the wall, blood still crusted on his shirt. He hated how weak he felt, but he knew he didn't have much choice. The only location he had been planning to head toward was the other Dark Guild bases, and he had already accepted that they were likely all dead. If he returned there, it would only be to die alongside them. They moved quickly through the back streets, ducking between alleyways and slipping past shattered fences. Dean led them in silence, while Rickel walked like a man out for a stroll, his hands in his pockets and his eyes half-lidded as though none of this concerned him. They broke in through the back door of a diner, slipping past the darkened kitchen, then passed through the staff exit and into another narrow street. From there, they ventured through the service corridors of several more restaurants and abandoned business avenues, navigating like ghosts who knew every shortcut in the city. Finally, after what felt like an endless maze of dimly lit halls and creaking stairs, they emerged into the back of a bookshop with several floors above it. Rickel closed the door quietly behind them and locked it with a soft click. At last, it looked like they were going to stop and breathe. "We've gone far enough without seeing sight of them, but they're going to be looking all over for you in the city," Rickel said, as he produced the same spray bottle he had used earlier. He began misting it casually across the room and over Marcus's tattered clothes. The faint smell of herbs and metal filled the air. "What is that you're spraying me with? Is it toxic?" Marcus asked, watching him warily. His voice was hoarse, but there was an edge of suspicion behind it. After everything that had just happened, he wasn't in the mood for cryptic tricks. "You're heavily injured, bleeding," Rickel explained calmly. "So you stink. This is to cover up your scent. Although that's all it doesn't change the scent, just masks it. It will work for a while to confuse them, but it won't last forever. They'll eventually pick up that something smells off, especially if they're determined." "So this only buys time," Marcus muttered. He slumped into an old chair, his arms draped over the rests. "And while it's working, what? I just wait here for them to find me anyway." "It's better that you're in a place with other humans," Rickel continued as though Marcus hadn't spoken. "They'll have to filter through dozens of overlapping scents. It won't stop them if they get close, but it might keep them wandering in circles for long enough for you to move again." Marcus's hands curled into fists on his knees. He was shaking, not entirely from fear, but from exhaustion and frustration. "First, why are you helping me? Why did they attack? And why are they attacking all of the Dark Guild? You even know the reason behind it?" Rickel's eyes slid to him lazily, like a teacher tolerating a foolish question. "Why are you asking me something you already know yourself?" he replied. "It's quite clear you understand why they attacked you, because of your association with a particular group. I'm sure they warned you about them, just in case. What you probably didn't expect was the scale of the assault. You didn't think they were capable of such coordination, or that they'd risk this much to eliminate you." Marcus's mouth opened, then shut again. He hated that Rickel was right. Somewhere deep down, he had known this was coming, but he had hoped they wouldn't be bold enough to try. "As for why I saved you," Rickle went on, "it's because with your powers and talents, I believe you might still be useful. You could play an important role in what's to come. But our journey together will have to end here. There isn't much more we can do for you." Dean shot Marcus a look that was almost apologetic. "They can't know of our existence," he added simply. Marcus slumped back in his chair. He didn't fully understand why Rickle had gone this far to help him, but at least it didn't look like either of them planned to kill him. That was something. "So I'm just going to be chased for the rest of my life," he said quietly, "and stay in hiding. That's all I can do." "Right now," Rickle said, capping the spray bottle with a soft click, "there is only one place where you would be safe from them. One place where they will be hesitant to try and reach you. On top of that, they might be the only ones capable of protecting you." Marcus's ears perked slightly at that, the first flicker of hope in hours. "There's a group like that, where?" "You should head to SLU," Rickle told him. His voice was calm but firm, the way someone might give final instructions before parting ways. "The Howlers will help you, but if you go to them, you must also do your best to aid them. This won't be a sanctuary. You'll have to prove your worth." Chapter 1521, A New Home. As time passed, the vampires scoured the city, searching and searching, yet they were unable to catch even the faintest trail of where Marcus had gone. Their frustration grew by the hour, and eventually they had no choice but to report back to the man who had been placed in charge of this particular mission. That man was none other than Bryce Kane, the current first vampire leader. Bryce was still seated inside the auction house, within one of the few rooms left unbroken after the chaos. The space was eerily quiet now, broken glass glittering faintly under the dim lights as Bryce sat with his legs crossed, listening in silence to the report the others gave him. His crimson gaze was calm, but there was an edge beneath the stillness, like a predator holding back the urge to strike. "That person wasn't in any state where he should have been strong enough to escape on his own," Bryce said flatly when they finished. "I had already completed my share of the tasks required of me. I thought you could at least succeed with the last 1%, yet this is the result in the end," he exhaled, the sound more like a hiss. "I suppose I'll have to make my report." Far away, at an unknown location, a man sat in his throne shrouded in near-complete darkness. Behind him stretched a massive wall of glass, towering from floor to ceiling, and beyond that glass sprawled a breathtaking, otherworldly landscape, jagged black peaks that cut into the sky like claws, and a glowing crimson river that wound its way across the land like a vein. Within the shadows of the throne room, the man's red eyes glimmered faintly, sharp and unblinking as he rested his chin against a closed fist. He was deep in thought. This man was Lucian Scudder, the current vampire king. His expression was unreadable, carved from stone, until the massive double doors creaked open and a figure strode confidently inside. "Oh, Roa," Lucian said without moving from his throne. "You know there's no need to deliver the reports to me personally. I can always get them from the eight families." "If I did that, Your Majesty," Roa replied, stopping just short of the throne before lowering into a precise bow, "then I wouldn't be able to discuss these important matters with you directly." And he rose, his golden eyes gleamed faintly in the darkness. "Here is my report." Roa began with the matter concerning Bryce Kane and the others. He described how their mission had been a success in eliminating the Dark Guild, their strikes swift and merciless, cutting through the organization's structure like a blade through silk. However, he added, their victory had not been total. The leader of the Dark Guild had gotten away. Despite continued pursuit, it seemed increasingly unlikely they would manage to track him down. "That is good news," Lucian said after a pause. His voice was low and steady, yet carried a subtle undertone of menace. "They had been growing their power for far too long. We removed the altars at precisely the right time and we broke the White Rose. The only human power left that posed any true threat was the Dark Guild. If they had been allowed to continue unchecked, there was a chance they could have become a serious problem in the future." He waved one languid hand. "I would not worry too much about their leader. He is only one person." Roa gave a small nod, though there was a flicker of doubt in his expression. He had another report to give, one that seemed to weigh far more heavily on his mind. "There is also a matter concerning the two Alpha Packs," he said carefully. "We have received reports that the Howlers have managed to defeat the Lupus Pack." Lucian's head tilted slightly at that. The casual slouch in his throne disappeared as he straightened, interest sharpening in his gaze. Is that so? He murmured. I knew he showed talent, but to have been able to defeat all of Lupus's group, he has done far better than I expected. A faint smirk tugged at the corner of his lips. Perhaps that one is more dangerous than I gave him credit for. That is not all, Your Majesty, Roa continued, his tone tightening as though the next part might stir even more surprise. According to the sources closest to the scene, the remnants of the Lupus pack have been absorbed into the Howlers. They are now a larger and stronger force than they were before the battle. Most of those who perished in the fighting were regular humans on the Howlers' side, while the surviving werewolves have all been assimilated. Lucian leaned forward slightly, his elbows resting on the carved arms of his throne as he steepled his fingers. Roa pressed on. As for the second matter, it appears that both Gary and Lupus have disappeared. No one knows if they killed each other or if something else happened, but at present both packs are without their alpha. With this information, don't you think this is the perfect time for us to strike? Lucian's red eyes flickered like dying embers as he considered the thought in silence. The chamber was so quiet that the faint hum of the glass wall seemed deafening. After a long pause, the king finally spoke. It is a hard time for us, he said slowly. We have only just established everything in the new settlement. There is no reason for everyone to remain here on Earth any longer. The most important factor was to stabilize the situation, and that is what we have done, with Gary. I believe he is someone who can maintain control. What? Roa blurted, his composure cracking. His voice echoed through the cavernous throne room. Are you saying for everyone to just leave Earth? That makes no sense, not after everything you've already done to reclaim this territory. We are, right now, the closest we have ever been to controlling all of it. And you should know not everyone is satisfied about having to abandon our home. Why are we, the strongest beings alive, expected to run away? His words were fierce, his hands clenched at his sides, and for a heartbeat the air itself seemed to quiver under the force of his emotion. Lucian only regarded him coolly from the throne. He understood Roa's fury. Many of the vampires would share it. Change was always difficult. It always drew resistance, especially from those who had bled for their conquest and now feared it would be thrown away. There is one more thing, Roa said, his voice dropping lower. Are we really going to let him go? We never managed to locate Vincent either. Chapter 1522. What does the medallion do? One individual in particular had been more worried than anyone else about the outcome of the fighting. Unlike the others, he didn't possess any unique strength, and compared to the warriors out there risking their lives, he wasn't anything special. That person was Tom. He had been left behind at the manor with Zin and the others, but when the pack had rushed off to confront whatever danger Zin's visions had revealed, Tom remained behind, alone. The silence of the manor only fed his nerves. He had no idea what was happening, no way to see the battle for himself, only the endless worry gnawing at his chest. He had called constantly, desperate for an update, and after what felt like hours, Zin finally picked up his call. Through her, Tom learned the truth. She explained the chaos, how several members of the group had gone missing, how the fighting had finally ceased, and how, shockingly, the Lupus pack had joined forces with the Howlers, at least temporarily. Lastly, she mentioned something new, something that caught Tom's attention immediately. Gallarc believed he might know where the missing ones had gone, and it had something to do with the medallion. Wait, the medallion, Tom blurted, nearly dropping the phone. You know about the medallion he's talking about? Zin asked, startled by his reaction. I think I do. I was the one who gave it to Gary, Tom said, his words tumbling out with excitement. You should all come back to the manor to talk. The restaurant needs to be cleared out anyway, and honestly, there's no safer place than here. Besides, I might be able to bring some insight as well. Zin agreed, and Gallarc's explanation was put on pause. The group made their way back, the manor's long dining table becoming once again the center of their planning. The room, once used for training, now felt heavy with tension as everyone sat together, eager for even the faintest clue about what was happening to their missing allies. Gallarc leaned forward, his calm presence commanding the room. The medallion. I heard on the phone that you were the one who found it. Do you mind telling me where that was? Sure, Tom replied, taking a deep breath. It was at one of the excavation sites owned by NIRV. They find all kinds of little trinkets from time to time, but their focus has always been on fossils. When I came across it, I didn't think much of it, but it had a wolf carved into it, so I decided to give it to Gary. The bookkeeper's lips curved into a rare smile, one that seemed almost relieved. Maybe it was meant to be this way, Gallark said softly. As I've explained, my position as bookkeeper isn't one that has always existed. It was created out of necessity for the sake of future generations of werewolves, and originally it was a role meant to maintain harmony. With time, it has changed into what it is now. But the truth is, the bookkeeper was never supposed to be a solitary figure, switching from alpha to alpha. No, in its original form, the role of the bookkeeper existed to prevent two alphas from ever clashing in the first place. In each pack, there were meant to be two bookkeepers, one for each alpha. He let the word settle before continuing. The medallion was created alongside this role. Our ancestor, a man named Jack Dem, is said to have forged it himself. He split it into two parts, a circular locking ring and a wolf's head ornament. Each piece was entrusted to a bookkeeper. Together, they symbolized the unity of the role. It was said that if ever the werewolves faced a crisis unlike any before, if there came a rare moment when the alphas truly had a chance to work together, the two halves should be united. Only then would there be a chance for true unity among our kind. The room was silent, every ear hanging on his words. However, Gallark continued, the medallion was not to be used lightly. It was only to be reunited if there was a real chance the alphas could set aside their differences. In the past, there was such a time. Two alphas stood on opposite sides, and it was believed they could find common ground. The medallion pieces were brought together, but it ended the way it always does. The alphas fought, blood was spilled, and unity was shattered. After that, the medallion piece was lost. This was long before Lupus and Dean became alphas. At the time, I had believed those two brothers could be the ones to break the cycle. Both were of the Dem family line, both cared deeply for each other, and neither truly wished to fight. But with the medallion gone, there was no way to test that hope. When Lupus himself wished not to fight Gary, I thought once again how tragic it was that the medallion remained lost. He paused, his voice heavy. And then around Gary's neck, I saw it, whole, unbroken, the two pieces united again. I could hardly believe it. How had it found its way to him, and why now in this moment of all moments? If it had been discovered earlier, perhaps everything could have turned out differently, but now... Now it is acting on its true purpose, that much I believe. The room sat in stunned silence as Gallark's words sank in. That was a long speech just to say you don't have a clue where they are, old man. Innu suddenly shouted, slamming his hands against the table in frustration. You sounded like you knew something important. Wait, Marie said quickly, holding up a hand to calm him. Maybe he isn't finished. From what he's saying, the medallion is the reason they disappeared. So, do you know where they are now? Everyone leaned forward at once, waiting, holding their breath for Gallark's answer. The bookkeeper let out a quiet sigh. I don't have a clue, he admitted. Chapter 1523. An order from them. A creature whose very presence was enough to cause panic and chaos could not afford to remain anywhere near civilization for long. That was why, not far from Slough, deep within the shadowed folds of one of the mountainsides, Unzoku was breathing heavily, his fists clenched tight, his gaze locked in the direction of the distant city. His monstrous chest rose and fell with every strained breath, frustration dripping from his features. How could this be? Unzoku muttered to himself, his voice a low growl that reverberated against the rocks. How could this have happened? The fighting has stopped and I can no longer feel the presence of any of the alphas. This has never happened before. No one should have that type of power, unless... His sharp teeth clenched together and his glare hardened. Unless they themselves have gotten involved, how am I meant to do anything if they have decided to act? In a sudden outburst of rage, he swung his arm outward. The air cracked with the force of it, and several trees were ripped from their roots, crashing to the ground as if a storm had torn through the mountain. The sight only fueled his anger further. The vampires are pulling back as well, Unzoku said bitterly. They're being cautious, retreating from Earth. This situation doesn't bode well for me at all. That was when he noticed the marking on his hand beginning to glow faintly. The twisted lines etched into his skin shone brighter with every pulse of energy. His lip curled in distaste as he stared at it, and then a sudden surge of power coursed through his veins. Yet mingled with that power was a wave of irritation. Tenbris, Unzoku hissed, his voice dripping with venom. What are you doing contacting me? Silence! The voice that answered was not carried by sound but carved directly into Unzoku's mind. It was sharp and grating, making his head ache as if a spike were being driven through his skull. If I am reaching you through these means, it is only because this message carries the weight of his will himself. A failure like you doesn't deserve to be addressed directly. When you connected to us last time, there was a lingering threat of power. I heard what you said then, and your words make me sick. You are not like us, Unzoku. You are not even like those he created. Unzoku's eyes blazed, and his claws dug into the flesh of his palm. But I am the first, he snapped. That is something you cannot deny. And while I remain here and you are trapped there, you will speak to me with respect. Unless, of course, you want me to rip your head clean off. A failure is still a failure, Tenbris replied coldly, and there will be consequences for your weakness. The flow of power to this place has been weakened. The vampires no longer war with each other. They no longer feast freely upon humans. The only conflict left is between your kind and theirs. Your kind, with your insatiable hunger for strength, were supposed to carry his will forward. You naturally crave his power. Yet now look at you. Even the conflict between werewolves and vampires dwindles into nothing. If they succeed in uniting, if they truly come together, then they will hold complete control of Earth. And once that happens, there will be no conflict left at all. Already the vampires slip further into their so-called peaceful age. They grow complacent. They are reluctant to act. The voice was laced with fury, and Unzoku understood why. He knew the truth of where Tenbris resided, of where the others were, the ones bound to his marking. Their influence was limited. They could whisper, they could demand, but they could only have little effect in shaping events directly. You've cursed all of your kind to transform under the full moon, haven't you? Tenbris pressed. Unzoku's jaw tightened. It was true that with every new pact created under his will, the curse of the full moon followed. Yet because of the vows he had made with the two alpha pacts, that curse no longer applied to them. It always intrigued him how much and how little they could see. Still, with his power, he could always forge another pact, one that would once again be bound to his curse. On that front, Tenbris was not wrong. Do whatever you can to get rid of the vampires, Tenbris ordered. If the werewolves are left to roam unchecked, their numbers will swell. On the night of the full moon, their hunger will consume them and disaster will follow. The vampires have already done all they could. Their part in this is finished, and because they are not like us, they are able to form their own will. It falls to you. Do what you must. Unzoku's hand tensed, the glowing mark pulsing one final time before fading into nothing. The connection broke, leaving only the echo of Tenbris's words in his head. Power surged briefly through his veins before dissipating. This time he made sure all of the energy was gone. All of you, Unzoku growled under his breath, his voice heavy with contempt. You use me while you can, but in the end I will be the one left standing. I will outlast all of you. His ears twitched suddenly, picking up the faint vibrations of sound from far away. Narrowing his eyes, he bent his knees and launched himself from his position in the forest, his body a blur of monstrous muscle and dark fur as he hurtled through the trees. A car was winding its way up the mountain road when a massive shadow fell over it. In an instant, Unzoku descended, landing with bone-shattering force on the roof. The metal crumpled beneath his weight, the hood twisted, and part of the vehicle's frame collapsed as though it had been struck by a meteor. The car skidded to a violent halt. Inside, the two passengers were thrown forward, their bodies slamming against airbags that burst out to cushion them. Even so, the sudden stop left them injured and dazed, their groans muffled beneath the weight crushing down on the vehicle. Unzoku tore his way out of the wreckage, his hulking frame rising from the twisted metal like a demon emerging from a pit. He walked around the wreckage with deliberate steps until he came to one side of the car, where a man lay slumped in his seat, his breathing shallow, his eyes fluttering open with pain. You're both still alive, Unzoku muttered, almost pleased. His deep voice carried no sympathy, only cold calculation. That's good. If the vampires are to be dealt with, then I need to raise the strongest kind of werewolves there are, the gluttons. To grow their power, they must feast, they must consume. He crouched down slightly, his monstrous form looming over the broken car. I'll make them strong, strong enough to destroy the vampires themselves. But if they are to be truly unstoppable, then I must also deal with those who have made fools of me for too long. The Howlers, the Dem family, they have crossed me one time too many.